Welcome to Pivotal. I'm Hayat Gallo, Corporate Vice President for Commercial Solution Areas at Microsoft. I work with customers around the globe to transform their business through technology. At the center of every transformation are people who give technology its purpose. And that doesn't change with the advent of AI. It's actually being accelerated. People spark visionary ideas for leveraging technology. The release of AI technology like ChatGPT this year is exciting, but it has led to big questions as we grapple with the best way to harness those tools to enhance and support the people behind the work. We like to talk about technology. I love to talk about it. But we often forget that technology is most effective when it supports people with purpose. This season, we'll demystify AI by talking to the innovators using new AI technology to uplift their industries and augment their people, from education to journalism to surfing. And it just illustrates what AI is about. Everybody thinks it's about tech. No, everybody's using AI. And that's what we're going to show you on this season. I'm excited to share my conversation today with Karen Odegaard. She's the Global IT Managing Director at Accenture. So Karen gets to play with all the GenAI technology at Accenture and making sure she changed the way Accenture works as a whole. Very exciting. And so in this episode, we're going to really focus on the developer experience and how she's leveraging GitHub Copilot to reinvent the way developers go about their jobs. So Karen, thank you for taking the time to meet with us today. You've been at Accenture over 16 years. Can you tell us a bit about yourself and your current role at Accenture?
Yes, so I have been here for 16 years. I flew by. My role today has evolved. I sit within our global IT organization, and I'm responsible for all the work that we do from a generative AI perspective. So it's both AI and Gen AI, but that is my focus. Prior to that, I was running a lot of our enterprise real estate. So things like all of our Microsoft products and a number of other platforms. And I spent more than 10 years in consulting. And so I'm a software engineer by design. And so I kind of grew up on that track.
I'm sure that's very helpful in your role today.
I think so, because, you know, you understand technology from the ground up. And, you know, I've had the opportunity to go take training at Stanford, understand foundation models, how they really work, you know, understand the dependency around data and how data essentially shapes, right, these solutions. So I think that's been helpful in terms of understanding the use cases, you know, where you could potentially get low-hanging fruit, where data is less of a dependency, actually. I can look at this as a technology transformation end to end. I'm just not releasing products to people. I understand all the inputs and the outputs and the end, you know, how to drive the end to end journey, which has been my role here, and being able to shape that. And then there's a combination of products and then custom things that you build, right? And so today we often get the question, because we do have our own enterprise chatbot, like, what is the difference between that and Copilot and how to use it? And you can explain the differences right from the ground up so that people can understand the difference between the technology and the dependencies.
So when did you first become aware of Gen AI, and how did you react when you saw the technology in action?
I think when the world did. I think I remember it was like November of 2022, maybe, when ChatGPT came out. It piqued our interest. And a couple of months later, we decided, okay, I think we need to move on this thing. And so that is when we started our journey. So it has been a little bit over a year. And fast forward a year, we're using generative AI across all of our corporate functions. So it's been quite a journey.
So Gen AI has changed your role at Accenture. Tell us more about this.
Yeah. So I was responsible for what we called kind of our enterprise cross-platform capabilities. So things like Microsoft 365 and all the new emerging products like Viva and others that were rolling out from Microsoft, ServiceNow, you know, our internal company portals, so everything that was cross-functional. And ironically, our Gen AI work started in that space where we could take advantage of unstructured data. And so although I own this giant real estate, the only thing anyone has asked me about in the last 6 months is Gen AI. And that moved to be kind of a full-time focus for me, focus on that transformation across all of our corporate functions. Since, you know, the CIO organization is the one organization that works across every single silo. And so we're bringing it together from a technology perspective.
Wow, that's a big role.
And we only ask you about Gen AI. Yes. It must be frustrating at times. But
it's still very interesting.
So in terms of Gen AI, I'm particularly interested in how you're approaching developers and your experience with our assistant for developers, GitHub Copilot. Can you tell us about how you're leveraging GitHub Copilot?
Yes. So like all of our journeys, we started pretty small. We started with a pilot. I think with all of our Gen AI use cases, we really wanted to focus on understanding the value that it could deliver for our organization. So we partnered with GitHub to do a pilot early on, and how we identified who to start with, you know, within Accenture, within IT especially, we really focus on being first and best credential for our ecosystem partners. And so IT, within IT, we started that journey. We do a lot of development. You know, we're 13,000 plus person organization. We leverage resources out of our delivery centers, which is in Manila and India, where most of our development work happened. And within that part of the world, they're very receptive to new tools. And so, you know, when this was coming out, we looked at our delivery centers, where are they going to be the most receptive to using new tools and provide us feedback? And there was a lot of marketing around the product, so people knew this was out there. And so we tapped a couple of teams in our Philippines delivery center to be part of the 450 developers that we piloted this on early on. And that's how the journey got started. So today, we are using it across Accenture. We've now scaled from that 450 to about 10,000 developers that are using it in their day-to-day work. So a lot of it is focused on kind of internal development, but also development for client delivery work that we do as well.
I'm very interested on how we're going to scale. But before we go there,
yes,
I'm curious. So you get with the first team, 450 developers. What was their reaction initially? Was there skepticism? How did they approach the tool?
I think with all of Gen AI, there was a little bit of skepticism, but a lot of more interest, I would say, than skepticism. And I think once people started using the tool and saw, oh, wow, this is actually real, it can actually generate code that I can actually use, the adoption started from there. So a little skepticism, I would say, but more optimism in terms of art of the possible and where this could potentially go.
So when you do this kind of pilots, you always want to get feedback. So how did you go about getting the feedback to know how, where you had to adjust maybe, or what was next in the pilot? How did you set that up?
Yeah, so we created a couple of feedback loops. I think the best feedback we got was live real-time from users, where we set up these office hours where they would come in and kind of share their perspectives and give us feedback. We also did surveys, of course, and I think a majority of them actually filled out the surveys, which we know end users don't love surveys, but this group was committed to giving us feedback. So we did get that response. And then we also had a Viva Engage community where people can also just share with each other and share with our teams that were driving out the pilot their feedback.
Did anything surprise you as you were going through the pilot where you're like, oh, I did not expect this?
I don't think we initially expected a lot of the code that was generated to actually be used by end users. But that was one of the things that we saw was that, yeah, it was actually retained and used, you know, in their real live work. And so I think that was surprising, and that really helped us to understand that, you know, this would add value in our environment and users would adopt this.
When you think about pilot, people are always curious, in particular with Gen AI, about the rate of adoption. What did you see and observe with the developers as you rolled out GitHub Copilot?
I think we saw consistent adoption. But again, I think, you know, this was a pilot. We targeted these groups. They expressed interest. You know, they committed to giving us feedback. So adoption was really high, you know, 90%+. Mm. I think, you know, I know we'll talk about scaling, but, you know, we want that to persist as we think about scaling the organization. But in pilot mode, and especially early days, the novelty was there. Everyone wanted to use it. So we saw really high adoption.
So you said earlier that you went from 450, you're already at 10,000 users, right? And it must be that you were very happy with what you saw in the pilot. How did the experience of your developers change? What was their level of satisfaction? How did you measure that to assess, is there value in this product?
So most of that was via surveys. You know, every one of them said they would continue to use this in their day-to-day. They would recommend it to their colleagues. And then, of course, the metrics that GitHub helped us collect show that users were actually using this. So I think those measures helped us realize we could, the, you know, what this could mean at scale for our organization.
So I know responsible AI is really top of mind for Accenture.
Yeah.
So when you think about GitHub Copilot and you think about responsible AI, how did you approach this as your developers got to use the tools and adopt them?
Yeah. So I think like most organizations, the reality is when we think about responsible AI, we didn't at that a year ago knew what that translated to us as an organization and how we needed, you know, the controls we needed to build for all of our solutions. So very early days, we really heavily partnered with GitHub and Microsoft, understood their responsible AI commitments, what we could depend on our partners for versus what we needed to manage and maintain in-house and what kind of qualitative and quantitative testing we needed to do against the outputs to make sure that they adhere against our own internal responsible AI controls. So for GitHub, luckily, you guys were very mature. So as it went through our internal assessment, it was deemed low risk and we didn't really have to do much above and beyond understanding the commitments and the controls that you and Microsoft already had built within the product for us.
So with every customer I talk to with Gen AI, there is an aspect around user satisfaction and then there is the aspect of having to justify to a CFO investing in thousands and thousands of users.
Yes.
So when you think about your pilot and the data points, how did you build that case? What was like the key things that you used to justify to your CFO? Here you go. I want to give that to every developer in our company. How do you go?
So I think the data that came out of the pilot, the adoption metrics, the productivity metrics, looking at, you know, with all our Gen AI use cases, we look at the foundation. What are people doing today? What is the throughput that we're seeing today? How can that be accelerated and how can that translate to reduced operational costs or workforce optimization? But the reality is, across everything we're doing with Gen AI, we are just not there yet. So how we think about this is a strategic investment. We saw the value, right, for a small group of 400 plus people. We know that can translate if we drive the adoption across the organization. So we think about the decision we made is we're making a strategic investment now to get the value later, at least the return on investment later, because we are just not at the scale and maturity yet that we're going to see that immediately. And that's a conscious decision, but at Accenture, we believe, right, in the power of generative AI and that it's going to deliver on the promise. And so we're making that strategic investment up front.
What kind of metrics did you see from a productivity perspective? How did you think about productivity in the context of developers as you were observing the pilot?
Yeah. So we saw more builds, shorter sprint cycles, just general throughput increase across our developers. And obviously, if developers are able to generate more code and shorten some of the cycles, you know, long term is some of those resources can be pivoted to do different types of work. So those are the main things that we looked at.
And then if you think about your developers, I know they filled surveys. Mm-hmm. And so how did the satisfaction look like? Like if you were to go today and say, I'm taking GitHub Copilot from you, what would be their reaction?
I think we've seen this consistently with all Gen AI tools. Once you give this to people and they realize the power and that it is an assistive technology in their day-to-day work, I literally get emails from people, don't take these tools away from me. You know, I really depend on it now within my day-to-day. So GitHub is no different. So that's what we're seeing and hearing from our developers. The new way of working, you can't go back, right? It's like taking this away, taking Teams away, for example, right? It's just ingrained in how they work now.
That's awesome to hear. So you went from 450 mm-hmm. to 10,000. What did you learn in the pilot that maybe influenced the way you rolled out at scale? Because 10,000, we're getting to scale. What was different maybe in the way you approached the pilot and the scale rollout?
Yeah. So the pilot was really a proof of concept is essentially how we looked at it. Scale is very different because we're at 10,000 today. We're planning to get to 50,000 by the end of our fiscal year this year. And I think there's more work to do around change and adoption for us because it's not just, I think we were able to just put a tool out there and people, they had the novelty of using a new tool. They opted into it. Here we're at scale, you're telling people this is how you need to work, right? They're not, and some of them are opting in, but some of them are being told work differently, deliver more value for the organization. So there's more to do, I think, around change and adoption obviously there's more automation that needs to happen from a provisioning perspective. We also want to be able to track value at scale. And I honestly say we haven't 100% figured that out yet, but that is something that we're looking to do as well. So I think those are the big differentiators when it comes to scaling beyond the 450 that we started with.
And how did you pick the next 10,000? How did you choose the cohorts? Because I know every customer I talk to is always, how do you select cohorts? How do you define which ones are getting it first, second, third? So I'm just curious.
Yeah, I would say it's easier in this use case, actually, because you're talking about a specific skill set and role. So we're looking at, within our organization, who is doing this type of work. You know, it starts with that, but also there is technical constraints, right? Who's leveraging the supported IDEs across our organization? We want to continue to deliver value for our clients. So where can we deliver more value for our clients? So it's a hybrid of that. And also with a lot of our Gen AI products, there's been a wait list, right? There are people who actually want to use this. They want to contribute to the future of Accenture, the future of the products. And so some of it is also people just opting in. So those are the two ways that we're kind of, that we've created our backlog for users that we're provisioning access to.
So Karen, you talked about a waiting list. I think it's very novel. I haven't heard a lot of customers doing that. So how did it come to be? How do you approach this?
So with GitHub Copilot and some of the other products we're rolling out, we saw really quickly that people wanted access to these products before we are ready to deploy them at scale. But I used it as a way to gauge demand, because demand will tell us whether people will use this or not. So there is the business case, but there's also, are people proactively understand? Because we're very focused on making sure our entire employee base understands the foundation for Gen AI. They know what our ecosystem partners are doing. And so are they well-versed on the market? Do they understand, even before we can train them, how these tools can change how they work? And actually, we're using our Gen AI bot for people to go put themselves on the wait list. So we, part of this is also me just trying to just figure out how to reinvent how we currently work. And so we want everything to be Gen AI led. So the wait list is, go to our enterprise chatbot, ask to be added on the wait list for this particular product that you want. And it's so easy for people that I think that's the other thing. So we literally, and we didn't do any massive campaigning either. It's like, if people are asking, if they go to our Gen AI destination, this is how you can go get on the wait list. And we're at tens of thousands of people on the wait list for these products. And again, that makes it clear to us that there is demand across our employee base and that they will use these products.
That's actually awesome, because not only are you gauging the demand, but you're actually using Gen AI to get people to submit their name on the wait list. So it's like, you actually get started on Gen AI already and see how you can interact with the chatbot. That is just awesome. I think it's very novel. I think we should all think about it. It's like, you know, when you launch products, sometimes you do a wait list to create excitement or you can raise prices. But in this case, you guys get people to be very excited about the product. It's awesome.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's very interesting, this notion of wait list. I haven't seen that in a lot of places. This is actually very, very interesting approach. I learned something here. I should think about this. Now, in terms of, you said now it's going to be a new way of working. It's kind of, this is the way you work. It has to be ingrained in their day to day. When you think about hiring new developers, how are you now onboarding developers? What has it changed for you?
I think just knowledge transfer has always been a big thing in our business. Understanding code that's already written usually takes existing resources to do that. I think that's one change I'm seeing in terms of how our developers are working. Outside of that, I think we need more time, right? And we need to grow the adoption, because while we've given it to 10,000 users, we don't necessarily have 10,000 users using it at the rate that we're looking for now, because we still have more work to do around change and adoption. But I'd say just the notion of how people do knowledge transfers is probably the biggest immediate change outside of the obvious code generation productivity benefits we're seeing.
Yeah, we've all had that problem, right? You inherit code and you're like, what is this spaghetti? And
what does it do?
How do I make sense of it? I that's one of the things that I really, when GitHub came out, I was excited. I was like, you can actually look at the code and say, what is this?
Yeah.
And then you can accelerate the way you build a new code, right? And integrate with it.
Exactly.
So now you look at Gen AI across the board.
Yes.
You seem really well underway with GitHub Copilot. What's next? What's next? What are you looking at tackling now with GenAI?
Oh my gosh, everything. So I'm looking across all corporate functions, across all partners with Microsoft. We're also rolling out Microsoft 365 Copilot at scale across our organization. We're trying to get Power BI, all the Copilots, essentially, we are looking at them where we use the baseline products. Because I think that's going to accelerate our journey, right? If we can leverage off-the-shelf products. When this journey started, there was a lot of custom experimentation. But now we have products that are enterprise-grade, enterprise-ready that we can consume at scale. So it's really just pushing this out to your question earlier, the resources that can get the most value out of these types of products, because we're not at the point yet where we're going to give it to everyone. But who's playing these roles? Who can benefit immediately? Who wants to be part of the reinvention? And one of the big areas of focus for us, we can't do this so much with developers, but with some of the other products like 365 Copilot, is focusing on leaders. We feel like people follow leaders. Leaders are going to be change agents and really drive the change across our organization. So we're giving some of these tools to them first, because what we're seeing happen is when we give it to them, their cohorts also need it, you know, to support them and to also be as productive. And so I think that strategy has worked really well for us. So yeah, it's continued to, you know, partner with our ecosystem partners, understand where they're going with Gen AI, be that first and best credential for us and for them as well across all the Gen AI offerings.
How are you leaders adopting the new tech? Are they as enthusiastic as those people who get themselves on the wait list? What are you experiencing there?
In our environment, I'm surprised that there are a lot of leaders, yes, that are just as enthusiastic as our junior people. So I think that's part of the group. The other part, it's a business imperative, right? We are selling this to our clients. We're supporting their transformation. And so they have to be well-versed on these too. And in some cases, clients are already using the products, you know? And so, they need to be able to collaborate in that way also. So yes, I would say generally, as I look at adoption, you know, adoption holistically is still higher among non-leadership groups, but by very little. And they're also using it just in different ways. So I would say, yes, there are leaders also putting themselves on the wait list just as much as, you know, the average employee. And we definitely have more enthusiasm, I would say, than I've seen for, you know, previous technology shifts here in terms of our leaders asking to be able to use these tools.
I like your point about business imperative.
Yeah.
That's why maybe you're seeing that shift in technology adoption. And
that's a big part of it. Yeah.
Because you can't face a client if you don't know and you haven't seen it in action, right?
Yeah, it's hard to be able to articulate the value. It's hard to be able to articulate the shift in your workforce and how people should change the way they work and help just contribute to that evolution, right? Because a lot of this is, you know, even for Microsoft, right? You're learning from your customers how they're using these products, and that helps, you figure out your roadmap and how it should evolve over time.
Truly. And I think when leaders really lean in, it also paves the way, right, for the teams to realize this is not a if, it is we're going to do this. And I know I had to do the same in my organization. Now, I don't like enthusiasm because I have a lot of tech people, but still, you got to lead the way. And you get able to innovate with them. So it's exciting.
Exactly. You find yourself also as a leader, when you understand, you're instructing your teams to work this way. So I'll say to my developers, use GitHub Copilot to figure out if you can shorten, you know, this delivery cycle here so we can release faster, right? Go use Microsoft 365 Copilot to create this job description. So I find myself working that way now.
It's so true. I realized, you know, when we launched M365 Copilot, at first you have the first scenarios that, of course, we give and illustrate. But the creativity and how each job has a very different need. And it's actually interesting you said clients shape and give us feedback. Even within Microsoft, what we're seeing is different groups will use M365 Copilot for very different things. Our marketing teams versus our sales team.
Right.
They will rely more on specific features and they will push us more. Or their meta prompt that they create to extend the skills of their Copilot will be very different because they have a different reality.
Right.
But that's where the value comes, right? And the creativity.
Exactly.
And how you make that Copilot your Copilot.
Exactly.
I just love that.
Exactly. Yeah.
So Karen, it's great to see the adoption that you're seeing, and now you're rolling out to 10,000 users. If you had to think back about the biggest challenges that you faced that now you're really paying attention to, what would you call out?
I think I'd call out two things. I think, you know, we're a year into our journey with, almost a year into our journey with GitHub Copilot and just Gen AI as a whole. And as I mentioned, there was a lot of, you know, novelty in the beginning of using new tools. And so we saw adoption. We're not seeing that same rate as we scale. We're seeing adoption, but not quite at the same rate, which makes sense, right? As you're going from a very small group to a very large group. So that is where we've realized we have to put in more effort. And I know we talked about the difference between scaling, and that's why I say change and adoption and changing the behaviors and mindsets, not just throwing out a new tool for people. I think that's going to be a challenge for all of us, because that has a huge dependency also on the value realization piece of this, right? I talked about making a strategic investment now, but at the end of the day, the CFO is going to come back and say, great, I made that strategic investment. When are we going to see that return on investment? And so I think the continuous work around value measurement is another big effort and focus and challenge in all this, because you have to make sure people are using it. You change the behaviors and mindsets as a major dependency to that.
I think it's two fantastic points. Like, you're not just giving them a tool. It's about changing the way people work. I think you used the word ingrained in the way they work.
Yes.
That's really when you start getting the value. And in measuring with Gen AI is interesting, because I remember when we started in Gen AI, people were talking about productivity. And I was like, well, at the end of the day, it's not like people are like, we're going to save time. But it's not like people are going to go from 39 hours a week to 20 hours a week. It's just they're going to go from maybe less menial work to more high value work. How do you measure that? It's a very different way to think about productivity.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we are all like working through right now with Gen AI, to say, how do you then turn into financial numbers? Like, I can see you with developers, shorter life cycle for to get from ideas to code. When you're checking your code, less, more success than not. Like, there is things that are actually quite concrete with developers. But as you move through function in a company, we really need to think deeply about the value realization. And what are those ways of measuring? Because measuring a marketing person and the productivity we're getting through the Gen AI is very different from a developer. And I think we're all learning. There is no formula. We're getting into new territory. We all have the instinct that this is super powerful.
Yes.
And people say it, they're satisfied. And now we need to put that in numbers. So I really like what you pointed out here. I think this needs to be top of mind for all of us as we roll out those tools.
It is.
It needs to be part of the fabric of the way we work. And then we need to be able to justify and measure. And by function, it's going to defer. And I think that's a challenge for all of us.
Yeah. And I think it's harder because in the environment we're in right now, it's an option. It's an option as a way to work. It's very easy for me to be able to articulate the value. Like in the waitlist concept, I could have told people, go fill out a request on ServiceNow. You know, that's how you get on the waitlist. But instead, it's just ping a bot that takes you 10 seconds. Those are the types of use cases where it's the only way you can get things done, that I'm very easily able to articulate value. So I hope in this space, eventually it becomes a de facto standard, right? Where it's the way of working, not a way of working.
And I think for us, it's been interesting because that's why I was asking about onboarding and how it may be changing the way you work, because your point about de facto, if you're a new developer, you come at Accenture and we say, this is the tooling you're using. This is how you do things. You're not trying to change management, do change management on the behavior. It's like, this is your tooling. This is how you work.
Yeah.
You're an information worker. You all know you're getting Teams. But when we rolled out Teams, as you know, at first people were like, what is this tool, right? I'm used to doing emails. When do I do emails? When I do this IM thing and I have all those Teams. But now people are coming into Microsoft. Nobody is thinking about what did I use before and now I have Teams. They just know, this is my tooling. So I think there is this as well onboarding, and I'm hopeful it's going to help us with, as people come on board, that we can create that movement and it becomes that de facto you're talking about.
Exactly. Yeah. Makes sense.
So if you had an advice for our listeners, what would you say to them? Because you are handling this across all corporate function. I know every customer is asking me, where do I start? Where do I prioritize?
Yes, I think it's a journey. And like everything else, a journey doesn't happen overnight. And I would say, find that low-hanging fruit, because that is where you can quickly prove out value. The reality is introducing new technologies or shifting, evolving business process or changing the way people work takes time, takes effort, takes investment. But there are some areas where, you know, Gen AI can solve for now that it couldn't solve for before. Like if I take the example of like performance feedback, that's something everybody in our company did manually. And so Gen AI can now help generate that content. That's a really obvious quick win. Doesn't involve, again, this big business process transformation effort, and people can get value really quickly. So identify those quick wins within your organization, and that'll help you understand the power of generative AI and the value that it can deliver so that you can scale that across the things that do require more complexity to roll out.
Awesome. Yeah. I have another question for you. You're a consulting firm,
yes,
right? So you're learning a ton internally. How are you then translating that to your external efforts, right? Because you're learning a ton. Your clients are going to face the same issues you're facing. So I'm just curious as to how you're connecting the dots here.
Yeah, the dots are heavily connected. As I said, because we try to be leading and bleeding edge and be that first and best credential for our clients, we're using ourselves as a test bed for everything first. So if I think about the work we've done with GitHub or with M365 Copilot, is we had a lot of learnings outside of that because we are an organization that operates at scale. So we end up running into things well before a lot of your customers do. So for example, I'm having conversations with Rajesh Jha on some product enhancements that maybe your customers are not asking for now, but you know, a few weeks later, a few months later, the market needs it. But Accenture has already experienced it because of the scale, the massive scale that we're operating in. So that is what we do. We can take just a department that's the size of a whole company, right, for some of your other customers and prove out things really quickly. And then we shape that into offerings. So for 365 Copilot, if I take that as an example, some of the data governance work that we've done translates to offerings to help our clients mature data governance for M365 that we then offer. So that is how we work with literally everything that we do, is because we're a test bed first, we shape and deliver offerings and requirements for you, right, as a partner to help evolve products and help our customers mature in their journey.
We're always thankful for Accenture's push in helping us shape our product offerings. It's true that you guys have such a scale that you really get to experiment at levels ahead of many of our clients. So we really appreciate it. Thank you so much, Karen. It was very insightful. I'm excited to see how you get to the next 50,000. And I can't wait to see how you push us across all of our Gen AI products so that it's better for our clients. Thank you.
Great. It's been a great partnership. And yeah, we're looking forward to it as well.
Thanks, Karen. Thank you for listening to Pivotal. I'd love to hear your story and your pivotal moment. So don't hesitate to follow me and share on LinkedIn. Audience information is also available in the show notes. Our show is produced by Large Media. That's L-A-R-J Media. Special thanks to Lin Yang and our partners at We Communications.